The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's worldview and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Lock up the White House. Put on guards around the Liberty Bell. Make sure the Freedom Train isn't hijacked. Somebody protect us from crime, because it's possible that just like Christmas was stolen, somebody may steal our bicentennial. I hope they don't make a birthday cake for the party with full of candles, because somebody will probably steal the cake and the candles will probably be bombed. Our beloved United States of America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, now celebrating its 200th birthday in our bicentennial year, ironically finds itself amidst of losing some of the most precious freedoms that our founding fathers worked and fought so hard and so long to establish. Because we aren't truly free. We're not free to walk the streets in many of our cities, not even in broad daylight. We're not free from fear. Millions upon millions of Americans live in fear of crime. Youngsters live in fear in the hallways, in the restrooms of our schools. Millions of people live in apprehension and fear anymore as it gets the hazard of air travel and the probably subdued and somewhat subconscious, nevertheless real fear that many people experience as you see them with their eyes closed and kind of leaving thumbprints and armrests in a commercial jet on takeoff or landing approaches. As if the hazard of flying and the possible threat of a potential crash, which we hear of happening here and there, at one time or another during the course of the year, several aircraft go down with a loss of several hundred lives, it seems. Now, added to that is the mindless fear of being blasted to bits while you're going to collect your luggage in a terminal of one of our busy big city airports. Now, we're no longer really free. They're no longer free to do simple little things like going in a store for some necessities if it's the wrong hour of the day. No longer free to make simple change on a bus or a taxi cab where the sign says, collect change only please, or driver does not carry more than $5 in change. No longer free, really, to even design our homes the way we might architecturally desire. Our apartment buildings and public buildings and banks and places of business and supermarkets now cannot be designed without considering the specter of violent crime, usually in the form of ghastly bomb explosions. And so more and more. And have you seen the picture, or have you seen the reality of the new FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C.? That thing looks like a gigantic mausoleum. It looks like a vault. I mean, even a cat with stickum on its feet couldn't climb up the side of those slick, polished walls on that building. I guess it's about as bomb-proof as Hitler's bunker. I hope maybe even more so. Well, are we really free today in the United States of America as we round the corner toward that wild celebration on the 4th of July in 1976 when we will be 200 years old officially? Is freedom cowering before criminals? Is that what it is? Is freedom living in fear and terror of our own youth? Is freedom being locked up at night in our homes and apartments with a gigantic blob of keys in our pockets and purses that wear them out? With keys to the garage, keys to the automobile, keys then to the entry to the walk-up condominium, keys to the floor, keys to the elevator, keys to your apartment, and then special little devices to lock all the sliding doors and double and triple night latches and locks and peepholes and so on to protect yourself while you're in the home. And of course then the handgun close there by you, maybe two or three locations in the home, as is the wont of several people. I shouldn't say several, perhaps hundreds of thousands these days, who go regularly to pistol ranges to learn how to use them, and then are told by the laws, especially in the state of California, that you're going to shoot some guy who, in spite of the key in the garage, the elevator, the building, the corridor, and your own apartment, gets through all these other devices and enters your apartment, you've got to do several things. First, you can't shoot him in the back, even if he's fleeing from you after he's raped you or your wife, as the case may be. Meaning if you are female. So anyway, you've got to prove that you shot him in the front, not the back. And you also have to prove, and I don't know how you're going to do this, if he drops the knife after you shoot him, that he was actually threatening to kill you and there was no further recourse. In other words, you've got to be in the closet with a gun full smoking, cowering in fear, with a thief bedded to his feet, with great, glaring, gaping wounds from manifold knife stabs, apparently, if I read the law correctly, in the state of California, before you can be justified in using that gun that you may have in your home for your own personal protection. Actually, policemen say that's bad insurance, and that many people who are victims of homicide end up being victims of gunshot wounds inflicted with their own guns they kept in their home for protection and tried to use and didn't have the courage to do so when they caught a burglar in the act. And that is statistically demonstrable, apparently. It's a strange law, though, isn't it, that says that even if someone breaks into your home, you have to avail yourself of every conceivable means of escaping, running through the bedroom, if that doesn't work, to the bathroom, if that doesn't work, into the shower, if that doesn't work, out the window. And only when you can see there wasn't any window, and the shower was wet and slippery, and you fell down, the people stabbing you about 10 times, do you dare shoot that guy for entering all these other areas and breaking through all the safety devices and finally banging his way into your apartment. Is it freedom? It's supposed to be the land of the free and the home of the brave. But the brave are the criminals. And the free are those who commit multiple crimes, given a slap on the wrist in revolving door justice called recidivism, which is recycling criminals, and are back out in the state to do exactly what they landed in jail for doing in the first place. There's just freedom to live like this by the millions, especially the elderly. And one of the most vicious and hideous crimes now in the news, oft repeated, are youngsters. Beating, kicking, mugging, stabbing, knocking to the ground, or even shooting. Elderly women. And grabbing their purses. And of course, the hideous series of crimes in Los Angeles, the rape of women in their 70s and 80s. By young hoodlums who also rob, burglarize the apartments, and then usually murder the elderly lady living alone who is also the victim of rape. More and more millions of us these days are being forced to change our lifestyles because violent crime continues to sweep across America. And another burgeoning wave, and yet that's not the way to say it. Because every time you talk about violent crime sweeping across America, or you talk about murder capitals, or you talk about crime is up, or you talk about the disease or the cancer of crime, then you depersonalize crime. And people begin to think crime is like a disease. It's like a cold wave, a change in the climate or the weather. It's like a flu epidemic. It's impersonal. It isn't that rotten little teenage, simple-faced, long-haired kid in dirty tennis shoes that lives down the block from you. It's not the guy who's lounging against the edge of the garage as you pull into your apartment at night and kind of watch as you go by and speculate about whether you're going to lock your car or not. It's not your own teenage son or daughter, which is increasing now with frequent regularity as girls, young girls, show up in the very important crime categories. It's not someone you know, or even you yourself. It's an impersonal thing, a disease. Oh, no, it's not. No, it's Mr. and Mrs. America, and increasingly it is Mr. and Miss Teenage America committing crime. You see, the murder capital of the world is not the Soviet Union. Now, I don't want to get into the philosophical politics of that statement. It is enough to perhaps mention that the news was filled with what the communist government did after the takeover in Vietnam. They closed up all the brothels, put all the porno shops totally out of business, and then began to governmentally regulate entertainment. I'm not for that. I'm not for government regulation of entertainment. I'm passing on to you something that happened. Then they began to take all these hangers on, and all these people who had been flooding into this gigantic, sprawling megalopolis called Saigon, who were opportunists, and many of whom had gotten rich and driving their Cadillacs around as a result of the billions of dollars Uncle Sam poured into that country over more than a decade and a half of involvement there. And they began to send them out into the countryside. By the thousands, they said, move out of Saigon. Now, that's just an interesting point in passing, but I want to tell you that the murder capital of the world is not found in atheistic red China or in the Soviet Union. Now, they have, comparatively to ours, a very, very low crime rate. Matter of fact, some of the people who have gone to China have mentioned that in leaving a small item like an apparel, a piece of apparel or clothing, or perhaps a personal item behind, that no matter where you leave it, or where you drop it on the street, it'll be returned to you in China. Interesting commentary that in godless, atheistic, communist Russia, you don't find the murder capitals of the world, but in our own beloved Christian America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, one people under God, we find well over 10,000 human beings murdered in the 1975 year in the United States. We find the American murder rate, proportionally to the population, is more than twice that of West Germany, nearly three times that of France. That's all on a ratio of proportion to population, not just a raw figure. Four times the rate of Australia, over 25 times the homicide rate of Great Britain. And instead of hanging our collective heads in shame, we like to put it off on the kooks, ding-a-lings, and oddballs, and even a lot of police officials like to do that because that's good politics. In investigating assassination attempts, we like to muse and speculate about the loner, the demented mind, the underprivileged childhood, the child who was brutalized as a kid or the victim of a broken home, the kid who never had all the amenities and the luxuries of life, who had to go without. We like to think about this weirdo, not like the rest of us, who was a completely unique individual, perverted, twisted, and destroyed as a result of a deprived youth. And we like to listen to politicians who take such quick opportunity to put the blame on the few demented souls who are the off-scouring of society, and then we can excuse that great majority of Americans who we know are honest, Christian, loving, merciful, kind, gentle, fair, filled with character of quality and integrity, never dream of committing a crime, well, not while anybody's watching. The idea that every night shopper is a shoplifter, and far more the employees who work for the boss are probably pilfering, stealing, taking things home, everything from paper to paper clips to pencils to just forms to clothing to money. The idea that the white-collar criminal in the United States, by statistical evidence, is stealing at a rate of billions of dollars far beyond all of the mafiosa and organized crime, which you don't like to think about, because there aren't sensational movies called The God Chopper. It's The Godfather and mafia crime. But the shoplifter, well, he or she can be anywhere from 80 to 8 and below. Four-year-olds, five-year-olds have been trained by parents to become shoplifters. You don't like to think of the average Mr. and Mrs. America being of a criminal makeup. You don't like to think that cheating at cards, cheating in college and high school, petty pilferage or everything from marbles to hubcaps as kids, cheating a little bit on income tax, padding the expense account, little white lies that are told every day by the millions is a criminal activity. We seem to be in total ignorance of the fact that we create a beautiful climate for crime by our own foolish, and we should say maybe foolish too because of the energy crisis, but foolish notions. And as a nation, that we don't seem to understand the simple principle of cause and effect. We want to deal with the effect, that's crime, that's the burglary, the rape, the mugging, the robbery, the murder, and we don't even deal with that effectively. The statistics I gave on one televised program involving the problem of crime would show that a 1% or so of convictions by the time you looked at the number of apprehensions for crime. First, you had to look at the fact that only about 50% or so of crime, especially in the rape category, is ever reported. The police say in some categories of crime, especially malicious mischief, especially crimes against property, damage of property and automobiles and homes and so on by young teenagers, virtually never reported. Tens of thousands of bicycles, old beat-up cars only worth a few $100, motor scooters and motorcycles, pieces of personal property such as tools, lawnmowers, whatnot, are stolen and never reported. A tremendous number of burglaries are committed every year and never reported because many people live in a neighborhood where they are afraid to blow the whistle for fear of retaliation because they think they know who did it. The kid down the block, but they're afraid to say anything about it. So the first point we want to make is that only about 50% of crime, at least in some major categories, is ever reported in the first place. Only a tiny percentage of those reported ever ends up leading a court case to arrest and apprehension. Those who are apprehended, only a tiny percentage actually go to court. Of those who go to court, only a tiny percentage are ever convicted. Of those who are convicted, only a tiny percentage ever go to jail. Of those who go to jail, only a tiny percentage ever stay there for any definitive length of time. Now, when you look at the true picture, the old adage, crime doesn't pay, is a bunch of gobbledygook that isn't even true anymore. It isn't even true anymore. Oh, yeah, crime does pay, and pays handsomely. The millions upon millions who make it a way of life. Meanwhile, we like to abide by the foolish idea that the criminals are few, that we as a country are a great country, a wonderful country, a Christian country, a country of integrity and of conscience, a country of great, swelling, wonderful human spirit, that we are the very embodiment of all that is kind and gentle and good and magnanimous, that we as a country are a country of character. And as long as we continue to look at ourselves in that glow of rose-hued fake glasses we like to wear when looking introspectively into our national sociological makeup, we will continue to ignore the real cause of crime and deal with the effect. The elementary fact that criminals are made, not born, seems to escape us while we look at various hormonal or chromosomal balance or imbalance in people and try to decide whether or not it's by the full moon or the darkened moon that people create criminal acts. So instead of getting busy about the business of discovering the cause of crime in this country and finding those causes, systematically eliminating those causes one by one, we continue to kid ourselves. Bible prophecy talked about our people during this day and said we would be living in a time where crime would be a bloody, continuous, monstrous threat in the streets of our big city. There was a prophecy back in the book of Ezekiel that talked about a watchman who would be warning the people who are given the word of God and call themselves the great Christian nation of the world. That's in Ezekiel 33rd chapter, where it says, I have set you a watchman into the house of Israel, therefore you shall hear the word of my mouth and warn them from me. There's been a work commission to take that warning and witness of what is going to happen as a result of cause and effect, hazard versus benefit, action, reaction, sin, and punishment. To a people who don't seem to understand when you break laws, even though they are spiritual laws, hidden and unseen laws, yet they exact a penalty, and sometimes a fearsome one. And with that message is simply, if you break a law, you will suffer. And you don't need to understand the law. You don't even need to know it exists. A tiny toddler who knows nothing whatsoever about the law of gravity is going to get killed if he topples off a four-story building. Stepping gaily out into space, not even knowing the law exists, as so many do every year, and die in horrifying fashion. You don't need to understand that a law exists to suffer from the consequences of having broken it. As a matter of fact, the basic adage upon which a free society functions is ignorance of the law is no excuse. You're supposed to avail yourself of the knowledge of the existence of laws, be they laws involving trespass or parking. Well, what about the laws that regulate the basic institutions of society? The home, the school, the church. How long can we flout the laws of the basic institutions of society, which would give us the way of life we all so desperately want? How long can we continue to trample underfoot the Ten Commandments of God as spiritually applied in the New Testament by Jesus Christ of love toward neighbor and love toward God, and flout the holy laws of God before the natural consequences that God allows? And he's not sitting up there in his heavenly armchair and zapping all these petty crooks and thieves we like to think of as the oddballs and the fringe of society for holding up dairies in the liquor stores. You know that. He's just not doing it. And yet the nation as a whole is suffering, and the consequences of the disintegration of the basic institutions of the nation are causing the suffering. It says in that same section of Scripture, your own wickedness shall correct you, and your backsliding shall reprove you. And that works. It's a principle. In the seventh chapter of Ezekiel is a prophecy of a time when God has finally decided to punish a nation for its own good. And it says in verse 3, now is the end come upon you, and I will send my anger upon you, and will judge you according to your ways, and will recompense upon you all your abominations. What abominations and why? Well, if you can stomach looking at your newspapers and television news, then you know what I'm talking about. An unprecedented wave of ugly, revolting, repulsive, unsightly, hideous crime and violence is one good reason. He says in that same chapter of Ezekiel, verse 11, violence is risen up into a rod of wickedness. And he says in verse 23, make a change, for the land is full of bloody crimes and the city is full of violence. He continues on, talking of the increase in crime, and talking of the analogy of a chain, because one crime is practically linked to another, that one after another, like the link of a chain, crime follows crime, and crime precipitates and causes yet additional criminal activity. So it is. Serious crime, up more than ever before. It rose more in 1974 than any previous year on record. There's a 292-page FBI document which reported 10.1 million serious crimes in America during the calendar year of 1974, about 1.5 million more than in 1973, for a whopping increase of 18%. Statistics mean nothing to most people if they're not victimized by crime or participants in it. But those are true statistics, nevertheless. And a tremendous number of criminal acts, as I said, go unreported for various reasons. Ezekiel also said in Ezekiel 8 and verse 17, they have filled the land with violence. That's exactly the way our land is today. It talks of exceeding great crimes, a land full of blood, and people say it's as if God doesn't see it. He's gone way off somewhere. He's kind of retired. He's not interested in what's going on down here on the earth. And it's only a few petty crooks and hoodlums anyway. It's not everybody. It's not vast majorities of the population who have a criminal outlook upon life. It isn't a collective entertainment. Violence on television, blood and guts and violence in motion pictures, violence in novels. It isn't all the mind-bending science fiction, occultism, and otherworldly spiritism type of books you can pick up that are filled with demoniacal, satanic, diabolical, hideous plots of one kind and another that make a human mind virtually dazed, jaded, and half mesmerized by all of the Satanism expanded literature today. It isn't the hollow, empty, clanging pulpits of the United States that tell people it isn't anything obligatory you've got to do, no laws to obey. Just kind of go around with a sick grin on your face and say you love everybody, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. Well, it's all right if you do it. There's no law to obey. You don't need to keep God's laws. There's no fear of God prevalent in the United States. The idea that marriage is an institution that was actually of divine origin and intended to be absolutely permanent, a bonding, bound relationship between husband and wife with to a God-plane relationship, oh, that isn't taught or preached today. Marriage is a casual encounter, easily broken in a do-it-yourself divorce ad in the person with many big city newspapers. What they do today is ask the daughter to tell the new husband to sign the guest book. It's called the Hollywood Marriage Go-Round. If it lasts for 20 minutes, how long was Cher and that other guy married? I'm not sure. But then that's their problem, not mine. But we don't think that the disintegration and the breakup of the home, the disintegration of education in the school, and the hollow, empty ceremony of so many hundreds of churches has anything to do with a mountainous wave of crime. But it does. And it's time we began to realize what are the causes. Is crime really such a social mystery? Our nation is sick to its innards with the cancerous disease of crime, and yet it's not a disease that is impersonal. It's individuals. And a big part of the sickness is our stubborn, mule-headed refusal to face cause and effect. If we first discover the causes and then systematically eliminate those, we will have won the war against crime. But it's about time to find out what is the cause, and certainly it's not going to be removed by conducting all the research, which did cost us billions of dollars. Finally, after 10 years and becoming a political football, still didn't solve the problem of crime. It is not to throw more and more money into more policing, more modern crime-fighting hardware, the opening of additional police academies, more juvenile halls and detention centers, additional farm programs and summer camps, softening the image of officers. All these so-called solutions have failed to halt the avalanche of crime. Recently, we were interviewing some of the personnel in the county sheriff's department of Los Angeles, and we were told by Lieutenant John N. Barnick that increasingly juvenile crimes involve the use of firearms, unfortunately sometimes resulting in murders. At the Altadena substation here near Los Angeles in Pasadena, Lieutenant Alan Cole told us that juveniles were responsible for about 80% of all reported crime in that area. He found that 14 and 15-year-olds were being arrested for crimes that only a year before had been minimal in that particular age bracket. Nationally, youths under 18 accounted for 27% of all crime in 1974, while a shocking 43% of all those arrested were under 21. Arrests of persons under 18 years of age increased by 9% in 1974. We also recently conducted an interview our TV team did with Mr. Joseph N. Sorrentino, who is author of an informative book called The Concrete Cradle, and he's a juvenile court judge in California. Judge Sorrentino told us, and I quote his words, juvenile crime is escalating very dangerously and is symptomatic of a society that is morally sick. He then pointed to the fade and apparent deterioration of the traditional institutions of society, the home, the church, and the school. He talked about the middle-class turnip that becomes consumed with status-seeking and ambition. It becomes a non-parent. He mentioned that poor substitute, an electronic parent that I've called the automatic baby killer, television. He pointed to the emotional starvation a child suffers when his parents neglect it. He said that 70% of the children who come into juvenile court stem from broken homes, suggesting that the all-important role of parenthood is just not there as a preventative to crime. He said, and I quote, without a decent set of parents, a kid doesn't have much of a chance in this society. Well, I've gone on and on for years, and it could be more in the years to come about the disintegration of our home, the disintegration of our educational standards and system, and the disintegration of our religious content in the United States. About television, the automatic babysitter, motion pictures, entertainment, the peer pressure, the drug scene that accounts for 50% of all crime. And yet we wildly cast about for some cause, when the cause lies right before us and is a daily, constant indictment against us because of our national and individual way of life in the United States and many other countries as well. What I'm talking about in this program, you can have just about verbatim. Which while I'm ad-libbing from a script of an article which will appear in the Good News magazine. Not the plain truth, but the Good News. Now, the Good News magazine is a magazine that dares to go into deep biblical topics. For example, in the January issue, the articles were the one on the black horse of famine, taken from Matthew 24 in Revelation 6 chapter about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. The article, How Real Is God to You? The article on how children are people too. The miracles of Jesus, were they fact or fiction? What is true liberty? Another article. In the December Hymns, for example, millions didn't know the real Jesus Christ, the Jew, the Lord that is all. Judge not according to appearance. Are you a spiritual isolationist? How will God judge you? Did God create man perfect? Other such articles which are oriented toward those that have a desire to read articles that have a biblical basis behind them. If you want this broadcast, literally word for word, in print, you need your name on the head for the Good News magazine, because upcoming, on the next issue is coming out, this article on crime. In the meantime, you can also write for the booklet, Crime Can't Be Stopped, Here's How. And the booklet called The Modern Romans, How the Decline of Western Civilization is Happening Before Our Eyes. All you need to do is to address your letter to Garner Ted Armstrong, Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. That's Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Remember, there's absolutely no cost of money. It is free. It's gratis for you. The address again is Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye again.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, brought to you by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your request along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales.